So yesterday we talked about Lord Balaram, because yesterday was Balaram's birthday. We had a discussion about the Shadgarbha Asuras, who were grandsons of Hiranyakashipu, and who then, because of their transgression, in one place it's mentioned how they laughed at Lord Brahma, and therefore they made an offense, so in the next life they were cursed to be killed by Kamsa. And in another place it's mentioned how they had displeased Hiranyakashipu because they went to Lord Brahma directly to try to get benedictions. And in any case, it explains who these souls were who took birth in the womb of Devaki and were subsequently killed by Kamsa one after the other. It was actually preordained. And I had mentioned another pastime, which is a continuance of this, in which Devaki had asked for her sons back later on when she met with Krishna. And I'm going to read that section now. So this is from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 85th chapter. And the name of the chapter is Lord Krishna Instructs Vasudev. So, Krishna... Yes.
So these are the brothers of
Galat? Why don't you use the... They're grandsons of Hiranyakashipu.
So how would they be grandsons?
I don't know.
That means they're the sons of Prahlad?
No, he had other children besides Prahlad.
Okay, so they're like other nephews
Ahaladas.
Of Prahlad.
Yeah.
Okay. How many children did Hiranyakasipu have?
I think he had 4 sons. Sri Devaki said, this is text 10.85.29. Sri Devaki said, O Rama, Rama, immeasurable supreme soul, O Krishna, Lord of all masters of yoga, I know that you are the ultimate rulers of all universal creators, the primeval personalities of Godhead. Taking birth from me, you have now descended to this world in order to kill those kings whose good qualities have been destroyed by the present age, and who thus defy the authority of revealed scriptures and burden the earth. O soul of all that be, the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe are all carried out by a fraction of an expansion of your expansion. Today I have come to take shelter of you, the Supreme Lord. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains this verse as follows. The Lord of Vaikuntha, Narayan, is but one expansion of Sri Krishna. Mahavishnu, the first creator, is Lord Narayan's expansion. The total material energy emanates from Mahavishnu's glance. And of that total material energy, the 3 modes of material nature are divided portions. Thus, it is Sri Krishna acting through his expansions who generates, sustains, and dissolves the universe. Text 32 and 33. It is said that when your spiritual master ordered you to retrieve his long-dead son, you brought him back from the forefather's abode as a token of remuneration for your guru's mercy. Please fulfill my desire in the same way, O supreme masters of all yoga masters. Please bring back my sons who were killed by the king of Bhoja so that I can see them once again. So here Devaki refers to Krishna and Balaram as Yogeshwara Yogeshwara, the supreme masters of all masters of mystic power. Text 34, the sage Shukadev said, thus entreated by their mother, O Bharata, Balaram and Krishna employed their mystic yogamaya potency and entered the region of Sutala. When the king of the Daityas, Bali Maharaj, noticed the arrival of the 2 lords, his heart overflowed with joy, since he knew them to be the supreme soul and worshipful deity of the entire universe, and especially of himself. He immediately stood up and then bowed down to offer respects, along with his entire entourage. Bali took pleasure in offering them elevated seats. After they sat down, he washed the feet of the two supreme personalities. Then he took that water which purifies the whole world, even up to Lord Brahma, and poured it upon himself and his followers. He worshipped them with all the riches at his disposal, priceless clothing, ornaments, fragrant sandalwood paste, betel nut, lamps, sumptuous food, and so on. Thus he offered them all his family's wealth and also his own self. Purport: Bali Maharaj's devotional attitude is renowned as the perfect example of complete surrender. When Lord Vishnu, in the guise of a young Brahmin student, A young Brahmin student approached him for charity. Approached him for what? Bali offered all he possessed, and when he had nothing more to offer, he surrendered himself as the Supreme Lord's eternal servant. As the Supreme Lord's what? There are 9 standard processes of devotional service, and the last, Atma Samarpanam, as taught by Bali Daityaraj, is the culmination toward which every endeavor should aim. If one tries to impress the Lord with wealth, power, intelligence, and so on, but fails to humbly understand oneself to be his servant, one's so-called devotion is only a presumptuous show. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Dena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadahmayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're continuing the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, serving the Bhagavatam. If one tries to impress the Lord with wealth, power, intelligence, and so on, but fails to humbly understand oneself to be his servant, one's so-called devotion is only a presumptuous show. It's also a waste of time. Dharma swanustita pum sam vishvaksena katasuya not pariyad yadira tim shrama eva hi kevalam. Until if one's all of one's work and occupational duties don't bring one to the point of attraction for hearing the messages of Krishna, then it's called shrama eva hi kevalam. 3 imperatives in a row. Eva hi kevalam means absolutely, positively, without question. It's shrama, which means it's useless labor. It's just a waste of time. So there are 2 rules which govern all the other rules in the Vedic scriptures. There are many vidhis that tell us what to do and what not to do. And all of them are servants of 2 rules. And those 2 rules are to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. So if one doesn't achieve that with all of one's Vedic learning, for instance, it's simply a waste of time. Text 38. Taking hold of the Lord's lotus feet again and again, Bali, the conqueror of Indra's army, spoke from his heart, which was melting out of his intense love. O king, as tears of ecstasy filled his eyes, and the hair on his limbs stood on end, he began to speak with faltering words. Purport. Srila Prabhupada describes this scene as follows in Krishna. King Bali was feeling such transcendental pleasure that he repeatedly grasped the lotus feet of the Lord and kept them on his chest, and sometimes he put them on the top of his head, and in this way he was feeling transcendental bliss. Tears of love and affection began to flow down from his eyes, and all his hairs stood on end. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada mentions that Pujari, when in the temple going in to do deity worship, can offer obeisances to the Lord and can also place his or her head at the Lord's feet. And so when we have the opportunity to worship the deity, we're actually personally, we're touching the body of the personality of Godhead, because he's fully manifest there in that archa form. And by that, touching the deity, bringing the deity all kinds of items for his enjoyment, then our senses become purified. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. By serving the Lord's senses, we actually become satisfied, because he's the master of our senses. And this archa worship is the opportunity to personally touch the Lord. Just as Bali is putting the Lord's feet on his chest and on his head, we have the same opportunity when worshiping the deity of the Lord. Just yesterday when we had the Abhishek, and Krishna and Balaram were standing there in the Snan Patra, and the Pujaris were pouring honey and milk and ghee, there is no other scene to compare to this, seeing Krishna and Balaram being bathed. It's just very pleasing. Everyone becomes joyful and happy. And it's practically indescribable. You don't see it anywhere else. It's nowhere I've seen driving around Silicon Valley. Text 39. King Bali said, obeisances to the unlimited Lord Ananta, the greatest of all living beings. And obeisances to Lord Krishna, the creator of the universe, who appears as the impersonal absolute and the supersoul in order to disseminate the principles of Sankhya and Yoga. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur identifies the supreme Ananta, named here as Lord Balaram, from whom expands the divine serpent Ananta Shesha. Impersonal Brahman is the source of the texts belonging to the Sankhya philosophers, while the personal representation of the Lord, known as Paramatma, disseminates the textbooks of yoga. Text 40. Seeing you, lords, is a rare achievement for most living beings. But even persons like us, situated in the mode of passion and ignorance, can easily see you when you reveal yourself by your own sweet will. Purport. By ascribing to himself the degraded status of a demoniac birth, Bali Maharaj denied any spiritual qualification for being visited by Krishna and Balaram. But to speak of demons like himself, Bali thought even advanced renunciates on the path of jnana and yoga fail to please the Lord when they do not give up their pride and envy. Text 41 through 43. Many who have been constantly absorbed in enmity. So what are Krishna and Balaram doing in Sutala, visiting Bali Maharaj? Right, so Devaki asks, that previously I heard you brought back the son of your teacher from the netherworlds, so could you bring back my six sons? I didn't get a chance to spend any time with them. They were taken away. So out of compassion for his mother, Krishna and Balaram have gone to visit Bali Maharaj in Sutala. Many who had been constantly absorbed in enmity towards you, says Bali Maharaj, ultimately became attracted to you. who are the direct embodiment of transcendental goodness and whose divine form comprises the revealed scriptures. These reformed enemies include Daityas, Danavas, Gandharvas, Siddhas, Vidyadharas, Charanas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, Pisachas, Bhutas, Pramatas, and Nayakas, and also ourselves and many others like us. Some of us have been attracted to you because of exceptional hatred, while others have become attracted because of their mood of devotion based on lust. But the demigods and others infatuated by material goodness feel no such attraction for you. Could you please get me a Brahma Samhita? Other side. Right hand side. Middle shelf. Thank you very much. So everyone knows this verse by now. This is from the Brahma Samhita text 55. Yam krodha kama sahaja pranayadi piti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai sanchintitasya sadrishim govindamadi purusham. Everyone knows that part, govindamadi. Oh, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, the meditators of whom, by meditating him upon him under the sway of wrath, amorous passion, natural friendly love, fear, parental affection, delusion, reverence, and willing service, attain to bodily forms befitting the nature of their contemplation. This verse, number 55, proves this principle. There are other verses that prove it, that one may approach the Lord even out of anger or other kinds of so-called material sentiments. There's another verse you'll find in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, for those who are keeping score. And this verse you'll find in your shloka book. It's very parallel to the verse we just heard. It's on page 258, and the text is 10:29:15. Kamam krodham bhayam sneham aikyam sodridam evacha nityam harau vidadato yanti tanmayatam hite. Persons who constantly direct their lust, anger, fear, protective affection, feeling of impersonal oneness or friendship toward Lord Hari are sure to become absorbed in thought of him. So if anybody asks you to prove that somebody can approach the Lord out of these lower emotions and become purified, which citations would you make? Brahma Samhita 55 and 10:29:15. Okay. Two very important verses. Srila Jiva Goswami explains this passage as follows. The Gandharvas... Oh, I read that. I'm sorry. Text 44. Hare Krishna. What to speak of ourselves, O Lord of all perfect yogis, even the greatest mystics do not know what your spiritual power of delusion is or how it acts. Purport, systematic understanding of something should include knowledge of both its swarup, or essential identity, and its visheshas, the attributes that make it different from other things. Maya, the energy underlying all material existence, is more subtle than ordinary phenomena. Only God and his liberated devotees, therefore, can know its swarup and Vishesha. Text 45. Please be merciful to me so that I can get out of the blind well of family life, my false home, and find the true shelter of your lotus feet, which selfless sages always seek. Then either alone or in the company of great saints, who are the friends of everyone, I may wander freely, finding life's necessities at the feet of the universally charitable trees. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's not a copy in front of everyone right now, but we're hearing about how Krishna and Balaram went to Sutala, where Bali Maharaj lives, and recovered the six sons, who were killed by Kamsa. As we know, when Devaki was coming home on her wedding day, her brother, Kamsa, was assisting her by driving the chariot. And he heard an unembodied voice from the sky say that, "You're a fool, Kamsa, because the eighth son of your sister is going to kill you." And as soon as he heard this, he dropped the reins, he grabbed the hair of Devaki and his sword in the other hand. He was about to kill her. And Vasudev then pleaded for her life, first telling Kamsa that, "You're going to die anyway. We all have to transmigrate from one body to the next. Therefore, if you commit some kind of heinous activity, like killing your sister, killing a woman, especially on this day, then in your next life, you'll have to suffer the consequences." But Kamsa wasn't interested in good instruction because he was a demon. He was only interested in the present tense and enjoying his senses. So therefore, ultimately, Vasudev told him that, "Don't worry, it's the eighth son, and I will give you all the sons that are born to us, and you can do with them what you like," because he had to save the life of Devaki, his wife. And Kamsa agreed to that, knowing that Vasudev was a person of his word. And so six of the sons who were born to Devaki were summarily killed by Kamsa. And we find from the Shastra who those sons were. They were the Shadgarbhasuras. And they had been grandsons of Hiranyakashipu, who had been cursed by Hiranyakashipu to take birth and be killed by Kamsa one after another. Now, later on, when Krishna and Balaram are meeting with Devaki sometime later, she asked Krishna and Balaram to please bring back my sons, because she had heard that previously Krishna had saved and recovered the son of his teacher from Yamaraj's abode. And so Krishna and Balaram, wanting to please Devaki, have gone to Sutala. There they met with Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj is now worshipping them, and they're going to ask him and find out where these six sons are, to bring them back to Devaki. Bali Maharaj is speaking, "Please be merciful to me so that I may get out of the blind well of family life." And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that in response to Bali's prayers, Sri Krishna invited him to choose some benediction. And in this verse, Bali submits his request. Bali begs to be relieved of the entanglement of material life so that he'll be free to leave home and wander in the wilderness with only the Lord's lotus feet as his shelter. For his sustenance, Bali proposes he will take help from the forest trees, at whose feet are fruits to eat and leaves to sleep on, for all to use as needed. And if the Lord is especially merciful to him, Bali hopes, he will not have to wander alone, but will be allowed to travel in the company of Lord Krishna's devotees. 46. O Lord, of all subordinate creatures, please tell us what to do, and thus free us of all sin. One who faithfully executes your command, O Master, is no longer obliged to follow the ordinary Vedic rites. The Supreme Lord said, during the age of the first Manu, the sage Marichi had six sons by his wife Urna. They were all exalted demigods, but once they laughed at Lord Brahma when they saw him preparing to have sex with his own daughter. Because of that improper act, they immediately entered a demoniac form of life, and thus they took birth as sons of Hiranyakashipu. The goddess Yogamaya then took them away from Hiranyakashipu, and they were born again from Devaki's womb. After this, O king, Kamsa murdered them. Devaki still laments for them, thinking of them as her sons. these same sons of Marici are now living here with you. So there's a few discrepancies, because the story is told slightly differently, because I had said grandsons, and that's what it says in the first part of the 10th canto, but here they're mentioned as his sons. Purport. Acharya Sridhar Swami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explain that after taking Marici's six sons from Hiranyakashipu, Lord Krishna's Yogamaya first made them pass through one more life as children of another great demon, Kalanemi, and then she finally transferred them to the womb of Devaki. Everyone clear? Ramananda Saka's clear. Explain it to us.
First, they were born as the sons of Kalanemi. Then they were killed at that time. Then they were transferred to Devaki's womb. And I heard somewhere that Kalanemi became Kamsa in the next life. So again, he killed, as Kamsa killed the six of them. And now they are in Sutala Lok with Bali Maharaj.
Thank you. You had a question?
My question was on transferring from the womb of Kalanini to Devaki's womb. So my question was, did they die before being transferred? And he clarified that. And now that they are in Sutta Lok, they must have been born of somebody again, right?
Yeah, well, I think that's explained as we go further. Text 50. We wish to take them from this place to dispel their mother's sorrow. Then released from their curse and free from all suffering, they will return to their home in heaven. Purport. As pointed out by Srila Prabhupada in his purports to chapter 2, text 5 and 8 of this canto, Marici's sons were condemned for their offense against Lord Brahma. In addition, Hiranyakashipu once cursed them to be killed by their own father in a future life. This curse was fulfilled by Vasudeva's letting Kamsa murder them one after another. By my grace, these six, Smara, Udgita, Parishvanga, Patanga, Shudrabrit, and Grini, will return to the abode of pure saints. Purport. These are the names the six children first had when they were sons of Marici. The oldest, Smara, was called Kirtiman when born again to Vasudeva, as recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.157. Vasudeva was very much disturbed by the fear of becoming a liar by breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. Text 52. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after saying this, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, having been duly worshipped by Bali Maharaj, took the six sons and returned to Dwarka, where they presented them to their mother. Not explained how they were there and in which body. When she saw her lost children, Goddess Devaki felt such affection for them that milk flowed from her breast. She embraced them and took them onto her lap, smelling their heads again and again. Lovingly, she let her sons drink from her breast, which became wet with milk just by their touch. She was entranced by the same illusory energy of Lord Vishnu that initiates the creation of the universe. Purport. In the opinion of Srila Jiva Goswami, the word Srishti can here also refer to the creative process by which Lord Vishnu's Yogamaya arranges the settings and situations of his pastimes. There is indeed no question of Mother Devaki being affected by the material aspect of Maya. And this was a point brought up in the earlier chapter 2 of the 10th canto, that Yogamaya is Krishna's Shakti, and Yogamaya has an expansion known as Mahamaya, which can be who can exert her influence interchangeably in this world according to who she's dealing with. So Mahamaya means that one is bewildered by the external feature of the Lord. And Yogamaya means that the devotees are bewildered, in a sense, by Krishna's internal energy. Mahatmanas dumam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyananyamanaso gyatva bhutitim avyayam. The devotees are under the protection of the Lord's internal potency. So as an example of Yogamaya, when in the pastimes of Krishna in Goloka, Gokula, Mother Yashoda chides Krishna for eating dirt. She asks him to prove that he hasn't eaten dirt, because he said they're all lying. All my friends are ganging up on me and they're saying that I ate dirt, but I didn't actually eat dirt. And so Mother Yashoda said, well, you sit down on my lap, you open your mouth, and I'll look inside and see if you ate dirt or not. So when she did that, she saw the entire universal creation. She saw herself holding Krishna on her lap, and momentarily she became bewildered by the opulence of the Lord. But then she asked him to close his mouth, and she forgot the whole thing. And the ability to forget Krishna's opulence is affected by Yogamaya, because it impedes the natural affection of the devotees in Gokula to see that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all energies. Just as on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Arjuna saw Krishna's universal form, he became so enamored of his friend's opulence, of seeing Krishna's opulence, that he said, I'm a great offender. Previously, he was a friend, and they would sit on the same seat, they would joke together, they would have very casual dealings. But when Arjuna saw that Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he became fearful, and he said, I've made so many offenses sitting on the same seat, lying on the same bed, making light talk with you, but actually you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that instance, because of seeing Krishna's opulence, he lost that affectionate feeling that he had, and he was separated by the opulence. So in the very intimate relationships Krishna has in Gokula, they are covered by this Yogamaya potency, so that they don't see Krishna's opulence as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, their affection for him and their relationships remain unbroken. Text 55 through 56. By drinking her nectarian milk, the remnants of what Krishna himself had previously drunk, the six sons touched the transcendental body of the Lord Narayan, and this contact awakened them to their original identities. Krishna Prasad. They bowed down to Govinda, Devaki, their father, and Balaram, and then, as everyone looked on, they left for the abode of the demigods. Purport. Lord Krishna remained as an infant with Devaki and Vasudev for only a very short time. First, the Lord appeared before them in his four-armed Vishnu form, and after hearing their prayers, he changed himself into an apparently ordinary infant for their pleasure. But to save Krishna from suffering his brother's fate, Vasudev at once removed him from Kamsa's prison. Just before Vasudev took him away, Mother Devaki suckled Krishna once so that he would not feel thirsty during the long trip to Nandavraja. This we learn from the commentary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. This is an example of how important parampara is, because if we didn't have the commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, this question will remain unanswered. And I have to admit, last night when I was recalling this pastime, I hesitated, because when I was recounting how these Sadgarbha Asuras had become restored to their original position, and I was about to say that because they drank the milk from Devaki's breast, which I knew was a fact, and that Krishna had previously done that, I thought, I forgot this passage, and I was thinking, when did he do that? Because he left so early, right after being born in the prison. Vasudev took him across the Jamuna and took him into the household of Yashoda. So for a minute I hesitated, but there was no other conclusion. It had to have been. This is the story. So this purport answers it by the grace of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that just before leaving the prison, Krishna had been suckled by Mother Yashoda and then went across. And therefore, when the Shadgarbhas took the breast milk of Devaki, they got the prasad of Krishna and were restored. So this is also indicates the importance of taking Krishna prasadam. This is how we become restored to our original spiritual nature. Text 57, I'm very happy. In fact, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a story of when Lord Chaitanya is traveling in South India, he meets a devotee of Lord Ram who invited Lord Chaitanya to his home to take prasadam. And of course, at that time, when sannyasis are traveling, they could only take meals at certain people's house. According to social etiquette, the person would have to be of a certain stature. Couldn't just eat here, there, and everywhere. Anyway, he went to the house of this devotee of Lord Ram, Brahman, and when lunchtime approached, he noticed that there was no cooking going on. And he inquired, he said, so lunchtime has come and gone, and what is your method? And this devotee said, how can I cook now when Mother Sita has been stolen away by Ravana? And how could she have been touched by the hands, defiled by this evil person, the mother of the universe? He was in so much lamentation. He was lamenting so much because of this incident that he was dysfunctional. He couldn't even cook. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated very much his method of worshiping the Lord. He was so absorbed in the pastime in that way. But he told him, don't worry, because actually Ravana never actually touched Sita. He said when he came to touch her, actually the fire god Agni took the real Sita and kept her in a place safe throughout the entire pastime and produced a Maya Sita. And that's the Sita, the expansion of Sita and Maya Sita that Ravana actually took to the island of Lanka. So he told him this, and the man was somewhat pacified. But later on, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in another place in South India, he found a copy of the Agni Purana. And in that Purana, it actually gave the Shastric evidence of how this was actually true. So we go by Praman. We follow the evidence. If Rupa Goswami says, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Panchatriki Vidimbina Aikantiki Hare Bhakter Upattayaiva Kalpate, that devotional service that doesn't follow the injunctions of the Shruti, the Smriti, and the Pancharatra is simply a disturbance to society. And in spiritual circles, when one makes a point, he or she must back it up through Shastra. You have to give praman or evidence, just as in court, if you give a legal theory, you have to back it up by giving precedent and cite the law books. So the Goswamis, Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano Shadharma Samstapako, Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro. Their business was to go through all the Shastras very carefully to bring out the most important evidence to help everyone in the world direct themselves on the path of devotional service. Do you have a question? Okay. Seeing her return, her sons return from death and then depart again, saintly Devaki was struck with wonder, O King. She concluded that this was all simply an illusion created by Krishna. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Soul, the Lord of unlimited valor, performed countless pastimes just as amazing as this one, O descendant of Bharata. Sri Suta Goswami said, this pastime enacted by Lord Murari, whose fame is eternal, totally destroys the sins of the universe and serves as the transcendental ornament for the devotee's ears. Anyone who carefully hears or narrates this pastime, as recounted by the venerable son of Vyas, will be able to fix his mind in meditation on the Supreme Lord and attain to the all-auspicious kingdom of God. So in the Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, and what is the name of that chapter? Divinity and Divine Service. We chanted that chapter last night. How many verses? 34 verses in that. All very important. And there it is said, Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Makaha. Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Gatihi. Vasudeva param Jnanam, Vasudeva param Tapaha. Vasudeva para Dharmo, Vasudeva para Gatihi. That the supreme goal of life is Vasudev. The purpose of all the Vedas is to understand Vasudev. And the perfection of yoga and meditation is to fix one's mind on Vasudev. So this is effectively done, especially by hearing the pastimes of the Lord in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One's mind becomes purified and cleansed by hearing about the activities of Krishna. Vikriditam vrajavardubhir aham cha Vishnu shradhanvito nashinu yad atuvarna yadya. That the disease of the heart, rogam, there's a disease in the heart which compels me to stay in this material world and try to enjoy. But by hearing about the pastimes of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that dread disease, hridrogam, is cured by hearing shravanam and kirtanam, hearing and chanting about the pastimes of Krishna. Mystery solved. We solved the mysteries of the Shadgarbha asuras that last night lingered at some point. Yes.
There is still another mystery, which is about the six sons of about the six dead sons who are now living, who are then living in Shrutal Lok, and then they were brought before Devaki. So, were they brought in the form of in the same forms as they were at the time they died when they were infants, if they are brought in a different form, then how can Devaki feel that they are actually her children?
I think you answered your own question, but it's not mentioned. We've not heard that, you know, exactly what form they're in. But if you like, just for thoroughness, we can check the Krishna book to see if it's mentioned there. But I don't recall. It's sort of assumed that jump is there, that they're brought as children. Otherwise, as you say, how could she have that natural affection seeing them? Of course, it is mentioned here that who is going to get those sons, Krishna and Balaram, who are Yogeshwara, Yogeshwara, the supreme master of all mystics. That's mentioned several times. And it's mentioned that Devaki herself, after seeing this wondrous pastime, I mean, the whole pastime is rather miraculous, how they would just immediately go to Sutala and there meet Bali Maharaj and then bring them back. But so far, that is a mystery. And we'll continue to research to see if we can find it.
I was trying to understand that mystery about the asuras having tasted the same prasadam that Krishna did. But in terms of chronology, they came before Krishna, didn't they? Means there were six of them who were born to Devaki.
No, the point is, what? Oh, here's what happened.
Yes.
So these six sons were actually originally sons of Marichi. And then they had laughed at Lord Brahma, and therefore they had been cursed to take birth. Then they came as sons of, in their next life, is it Kalanemi? And then they were killed again, and then they came into the womb of Devaki, one after the other, and they were each killed by Kamsa. This is part of the curse that Hiranyakashipu had given, that they would be killed by Kamsa one after the other. Am I on track? Okay. So now they had been killed immediately upon being born by Kamsa. They had gone to this region of Sutala, where Bali Maharaj is, and somehow they were, still in that child form. And then Krishna was born. Of course, we heard last night that Sankarshan comes into the womb of Devaki first, and he prepares the womb and the environment so that Krishna can come, because the Shadgarbha Asuras had already been there. So what kind of environment is that? So Sankarshan comes, purifies the environment so that Krishna can appear, sets the stage for Krishna to appear. Sankarshan is attracted by Yogamaya to the womb of Rohini, and then Krishna appears in the womb. He's born in the prison, and just before he is taken by Vasudev into Gokula, to Nanda Maharaj's home, so that he doesn't go hungry, Devaki breastfeeds him. So later on, when Krishna and Balaram go and retrieve those six sons and bring them back, Devaki, out of affection, feeds them her breast milk. That breast milk had already been drunk by Krishna in his infancy.
So they were still that young?
The Shadgarbhas?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what we're assuming.
They were drunk.
Yes. Yes.
Hare Krishna. You said the six sons of Kalanemi, once they were retrieved by Krishna and Balaram, Devakis suckled them and they were sent back to their... they were liberated, or they went back to the demigods' world?
They went back to the planets of the saints.
Oh,
like in higher planetary systems.
Okay, not fully
mentioned.
Liberated, not to Krishna, not to Goloka Vrindavan.
Well, it's mentioned here that they went into saintly association. So there are situations even in this world where there are great devotees and great saints who are performing devotional service. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam ba jagadisha kamaye, mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti rahai duki tvai. Doesn't pray even for liberation from this material world. And one can be in the world, in this world, and be, pure devotee and be completely liberated.
I had a question about Sankarshan or Baladev. Yesterday, in describing what is it that he actually was doing, he was supporting Krishna, and that he maintains the spiritual world, it was said. Most of the things in the spiritual world he's maintaining. Is he also maintaining the cosmic manifestation?
Yes.
So then if that is the case, where would be the role of Vishnu or Mahavishnu? Is that something delegated by Sankarshan to Mahavishnu then to give rise to different emanations that then come out? Is that what it would be? That the in charge is Balaram?
Well, yeah. He has specific duties in serving the Lord. And one of them is holding up the creation. For instance, it's mentioned that Sheshanaga, who is in the form of a gigantic serpent, holds all the planets upon his head. They're floating that way. Or they're being maintained. So, in a sense, he's like the foundation. When you have a house, you have to have a foundation. So Sankarshan is foundational and holds up the universes. And this is his specific service to Krishna. He helps maintain everything and hold it together in a foundational way. So just like Mahavishnu is, how is he lying on the ocean of milk? Sankarshan is there. He's on the bed of Sankarshan. Sankarshan is supporting him, holding him up. So as Krishna's first expansion is Balaram. And the only difference between Krishna and Balaram are their color. And the other difference is that Balaram's always thinking, I am a servant of Lord Krishna. And he's always serving him in different ways. And then in all the different expansions, there are quadruple expansion of from Baladev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, Vasudev. And then there's another Sankarshan, and from them come another quadruple expansion. And then come the Vishnus, who manifest this whole material world.
So Vishnus then are further down the line as expansions of Baladev.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'll find that also mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when Kaviraj Goswami is explaining the ontological position of Lord Nityananda, so that one doesn't just think that he's an ordinary person. He's explaining actually that he's Balaram, and that all the Vishnus are expanding from him. Yes.
This subject matter of Krishna and his expansions are is very hard to understand, because each expansion is called it's a Vishnu Tattva expansion, in that they are each expansion is the same as the original person, but yet each expansion of Krishna in his Vishnu Tattva expansions, they exhibit a different they have a different role to play, and they exhibit different characteristics. So that makes it very hard to understand. But in the essence, are all expansions of Krishna just one person, in the sense that whatever the other persons think, whatever one of the expansions think, all others know, and vice versa? And
a couple things. One is that as far as it being hard to understand, it is, except if one is engaged in devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada mentioned that last night in the commentary. Bhaktyamam abhijananti avanyaschasmi tattvataha. To understand tattva and to understand who Krishna is and how he's functioning requires bhakti. One may try through intellectual endeavor to understand, but we hear from Brahma Samhita, Pantastu koti shatavatsara sambragamyo vayuradhapi manaso munipungavanam. Sopyasti yat praparasinya vichintya tatve govindamari purusham tamahambhajami. All the munipungavanams, the greatest of all the munis and yogis, they try to understand how Krishna is functioning and they try to reach him, but they're far, far away. Even after drilling the respiration and performing all kinds of mystic yoga, they can't understand him at all. But someone, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochinena Santaksadaiva Hrideeshu Vilokayanti Yam Shyama Sundaram Achintugana Surupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. One who has prema, this salve of prema applied to his eyes, can see. So how Krishna is expanding, look at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Dancing at Ratha Yatra, the same situation. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna himself. He's appearing as a devotee of himself. So in his pastime at Ratha Yatra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears to be dancing with many other devotees. In other words, there are many circles of devotees dancing in the Ratha Yatra. And each one of them is thinking, Mahaprabhu is dancing in our circle. And only a few devotees, like Maharaj Prataparudra, could actually see this, what was taking place. He could actually see how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had expanded himself. Everyone else was seeing it in another way. But he could see very clearly what was taking place. So how Krishna expands himself He's Advaita Gyan Tattva. Hare Krishna, welcome back. The katha goes on. that Krishna expands himself. Departure eva hita shantanama bhupetya dipayate vrvata hetu samana dharma. Yes, tadrageva hicha vishnu chaya vipati govindamari purushamtam ahambhajami. He's Advaita Gyan Tattva. He's one absolute truth, but he expands himself into many, many different forms. And each one has its own unique aspect. And those who are expansions of Krishna, they also have a sentiment of servitude towards him, like even Lord Baladev. So your first point was that it's difficult to understand. And the answer is ultimately nobody can understand Krishna. He's unknown and unknowable because he's so great. What can we understand except what he reveals to us? And the second point is, or question was, are all these different expansions of Krishna, you know, unique and individual? And yes, that's the mystic opulence of Krishna. Narada saw it for himself. He's a great devotee. And when he went to Dwarka, he went into these palaces. How many palaces did Krishna have? 16,108 palaces. That's a big housing project. It's much bigger than any gated community around here. 16,108. And they were palaces. They weren't just these, you know, tract homes or something like that. They were all palaces. And each one of them was fully opulent. So Krishna went to each one. Hare Krishna. And Narada went to each one. And in each palace, he saw Krishna was doing something different. Same Krishna, but in one place, he was carrying one of his sons on his back like he was a horse. And in another place, he was sitting with Uddhava and some of his other ministers, and they were planning some military operation. And in another place, he was being fanned by his wives, or one of his wives, and the maidservants were there. Each palace was completely different. And then he'd see Krishna walking out of one and going into the city, and he'd go into the next, and he'd see Krishna was doing eating, having some other activity. All the same Krishna, all doing different things. Now, yogis can expand themselves, actually, up to 8 or 9 times. We have to ask Satyadev. How many times can you expand yourself? 9 times. Leave one here. He's in Japan. He's there now. We could use a few more. And they all do the same thing, though. They're like mirror images. It's kind of like a... It's not as impressive. They can't do individual work. They're expanding it like mirror images. But Krishna, he expands himself. Same Krishna. Same Advaita Gyan Tattva. But he's doing different things in different places. And Prabhupada mentions that to understand this, you have to understand the principle of achintya bheda bheda tattva. Simultaneously, he's one and different at the same time. And then he goes on to say, you can't understand achintya bheda bheda tattva. Of course, the word achintya prevents you from actually understanding it anyway. But he said, if there is any inkling of understanding for this, it comes through bhakti. Bhakti bhama vijanati.
Now, I just wanted to... actually make a comment or ask a question, and that is that this ability, if you will, of Krishna to expand himself into these innumerable avatars, would that then define him as the absolute truth? Because often people ask, what is the definition of absolute truth? You say Krishna is the absolute truth. What do you mean? And I was sitting one morning in a class that Akrunath Prabhu was conducting, and he started reading. It was either from the preface of the Bhagavatam or one of the introductions of the Bhagavatam, where Srila Prabhupada points out this absolute truth as from whom all these emanations are coming. Mm-hmm. And it was very striking because right there, it is providing a definition of the absolute truth. Because it is said that there is nobody equal or greater than him. So if the absolute truth is one from whom all these emanations are coming, And there is nobody out there in the universes or any manifestations who could do that, then it makes the absolute truth, the supreme, is greater than anyone. Nobody is greater than him. The essence of the qualities of the absolute truth, one of them, the main one, would be his ability to expand into all these incarnations and avatar that no other living entity anywhere in any universes has been able to do that.
Yeah, well, the definition of the absolute truth is that from which everything else emanates. Janmad yasa yataha. This is given in the very first line of the Bhagavatam. And this is a succinct definition of the absolute truth. If somebody asks you, what do you mean by absolute truth? You can say that from whom everything else emanates. That's pretty all-inclusive. Everything else comes from him. And the invocation verse of the Ishapanishad, which we read regularly, Om Purnam Adak Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishate, gives a similar idea that he's the source of everything else. He's completely perfect, and everything else emanates from him, and everything that emanates from him is also perfectly equipped in itself as a complete unit. Yes. Yes, and then in the Chaturshloki, the four nutshell verses of the Bhagavad Gita, Ham Sarvasya Prabhavo, 10:8, Matak Sarvam Parvartate, Iti Matva Bhajante Imam, Buddha Bhava Samanvita. Krishna himself says that one who understands this about me becomes devoted to me with all his heart. Where else would you? Everyone's looking to find the place to place his energy. Our life's energy, where we'll get the most return. And if you find that from whom everything else is emanating, you might as well just put all your attention there. Yes.
This is a sort of follow-up to my question, which is that when Lord Brahma stole the cowherd man, then Krishna himself expanded as all his friends and the cows and played this pastime. But after some time, Balaram could see some difference that in the behavior of his friends. And then afterwards, Krishna revealed all of them as his own Vishnu forms to Balaram. And what is making me difficult is Balaram is the same as Krishna. So how is that he doesn't know that all of them are actually his own self? Or is it that he was just pretending as if he doesn't know, just to have this pastime?
In the cases where Krishna or Balaram don't know something, then Yoga Maya is in play. This is Krishna's Shakti. Parasya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate Svabhavika Jnana Bhalakriyacha. Krishna has multifarious potencies. He is the source of all energies, and he's the source of all the incarnations, and he has many energies working in order to enhance his pastimes. So those energies actually assist him and in his enjoyment. Queen Kunti explains, Maya javani kachanam ajhan hoksha jamavyayam nalakshase mudadrisha nato natya daroyata. She said, Krishna, you're just like an actor, like in a play. And there's a stage, and then there's a curtain, and there's this curtain where the actors come out in disguises. You've been to a play before, and you can't, we had this play last year, I couldn't recognize everyone at first. Who is that? And Krishna does that too. And who assists him in all these pastimes is Yoga Maya. And in Gokula, it's Purnamasi as the personification of this Yoga Maya. She helps to arrange all of the different kinds of leela and pastimes. So, again, your mind's getting caught in the achintya part of the achintya beta bait tattva. that Krishna is simultaneously one but also different. And the difference is also there. The oneness is there, but the difference is there simultaneously and inconceivably. So Balaram, yes, he is Krishna, but he's Krishna's expansion. And he has a certain mood of service. And we see this in the pastimes. This is one of the sweeter aspects, or the very sweet aspect of Dauji. Dauji means, the older brother. So he's always looking out for Krishna in his pastime. He has this kind of feeling of looking out for Krishna, that he is protecting him. In fact, the one day Krishna went off to and jumped into the Kaliya Lake, Balaram wasn't there. He came afterwards. Usually, Yashoda had said, don't let him go in there. Don't let him go near there. And Balaram was watching out for him, but he wasn't there that day. And actually, I think it was Balaram's birthday. So they were celebrating his birthday, and Krishna somehow snuck off and went off and jumped in the lake with Kaliya, and everyone came and saw this scene. But Baladev has this mood. So in understanding the tattva, how that's possible, that Krishna is simultaneously one, but he expands himself into many for his enjoyment. Eko bahushyam. There is one absolute truth, but for his own enjoyment, he's expanded himself into many. Once when Srila Prabhupada was on a morning walk, which he did every day, he used to go to morning walk for his health. And also during those morning walks, devotees would join with him and they'd walk along. Sometimes it was just one or two, and sometimes there were 30 or 40. And he would oftentimes, most times during those walks, he would bring up points and talk about philosophy and talk about all kinds of things. You can hear these. Most of them are recorded. We're very fortunate that we came into... This is practically one of the only fortunate things about being born in the technological age, that someone was walking around with a tape recorder the whole time. Early on, Hayagriva, which was... tape recorders are hard to come by, believe it or not, kids. Back when we were young, it was hard to get a tape recorder. But a few devotees had the foresight, huh? They were big and heavy. All technology was big and heavy, and to find a portable tape recorder, that was, you'd have to search the world for something like that. And they had something like that, and they carried it along on a. You see, Hari Sari sometimes carrying it on his shoulder, big old thing with had two microphones sticking out. Nowadays, it'd be concealed in your button or something of your shirt. So small, but they recorded all these things. And on one morning walk, Srila Prabhupada, at the very end of the walk, he said, see, this is Ananda. Because he was engaged in talking to the devotees, and there were serious questions, and they were laughing, and there were different points being made, and the devotees were really enjoying it. It was really enjoyable to go with Prabhupada on a morning walk or go anywhere with him, because just... everyone interacting and around Prabhupada, who was the cynosure of our vision, the center. And so as he came to the end of the walk, Prabhupada said, you see, this is Ananda. Because there are so many of us here together, there are many different kinds of interactions going on. And therefore, this variety is the spice of life. Variety is the mother of enjoyment, right? So you can have rasgulla. Let's name a few sweets. Rasgulla, gulab jamun, baklava. Name all with milk, though. What are all the milk sweets? Burfi, sandesh, srikant, rasmalai. Came just in time. Kheer, right? Yogurt, yeah. And misti dahi. I like misti dahi too much, I'm liking. So there's all these sweets, right? So what are they? It's just milk and sugar in different ways, just cooked in different ways, right? So otherwise someone could just give you a big thing of milk and say, here, there it is. And how much enjoyment you get out of it. But if they bring you 10 different preparations, there's Ananda. The variety is there. So Krishna, Eko Bahushyam, the one has become many. He expands himself into many, many different, unlimited actually. There are unlimited living entities. And each living entity is unique. This means Vishesha, my name, Vaisheshika, this is the root of this, Vishesha, which means there's a uniqueness in Krishna's creation everywhere. Every living entity has a very specific, particular relationship with Krishna. That's Ananda. And so his expansions, of which we are also expansions, we also have that relationship with him. How it is that we're one with Krishna, but at the same time we're servitors of him, is the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes.
So I'm just trying to understand the relationships here. So we have Krishna and his expansions, but Krishna and his energies are different. Like Radhaji will be different from Baldev, right?
Like?
Radha Rani and Baldev will be two different concepts, right?
Different concepts? Or if you talk in terms of his Leela, they're different in mood. They have different ways of serving. And yes, so there are different categories of Krishna's energies. So there's Vishnu Tattva, who are expansions that are just like Krishna, only they have different moods. And then there's the Shakti Tattva. So the source of all the Vishnu Tattvas is originally Krishna, and then all the Vishnu Tattvas expand from Lord Balaram, as Sankarshan Pradyumna, Vasudevan Aniruta, and then there's Mahasankarshan, and then they expand again into another quadruple form, and then the Mahavishnus come. And there are many different avatars and different kinds of expansions, and they all appear in this world through the Vishnus. So in that way, the Bhagavatam explains these Vishnu Tattva avatars are like waves on the ocean. They're unlimited. They come one after the other, one after the other. Just they never stop. They're going on like that. And then there's the Shakti Tattvas. And the Shaktis, difference between Purusha and Prakriti, the male and female. So that what drives this material world is the male-female energy. It's everywhere. Pumsa Striya Maituni Bhavamitam. And on the material side, what makes the whole material creation go along, it's the attraction between male and female. That's the main attractive force. What is the main attractive force in the spiritual world? Male and female. But it's in its primal form. Here it's a perverted form. But in the spiritual world, it's in its primal form. And the origin of all that is Radha and Krishna. They're the divine couple from whom all the others expand. So from Radharani, all the other Shakti Tattvas expand. So from Radha come all the Lakshmis. Lakshmis are all expansions from Radharani. And the queens in Dwarka are all expansions from Radha also. Different moods in serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
And then there'll be the third.
And then there's the Tathasta Shakti. That's another energy. So the Tathasta Shakti means the living entities. So the living entities are given a different category, in a different category, and everyone knows by now Tathasta means marginal. So we have this, we're kind of like neither here nor there. And we can be in the material world or the spiritual world. Because of our tininess in nature, we can be influenced by the material energy or the spiritual energy. And therefore the greatest of all of Krishna's pastimes, say the prayers of personified Vedas, are rescuing the eternally conditioned souls and bringing them back into this eternal Leela in the spiritual world. So we get the great benefit of being rescued by Krishna. And that's the greatest of show of his mercy and kind and compassion, is saving the conditioned souls. So the energies are explained in different verses. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetra Gyakya Tata Para. This verse you'll find in the Shloka book, which in one neat little verse it explains all the different categories of energies. But Parasha Shakti Vivadaiva Shuyate Svabhavika Jnana Bala Kriyacha. His energies are unlimited. You just categorize them for the sake of understanding some basic categories, but that's helpful to know that.
Thank you.
Yes, Nilesh.
So, Rupaji, I have. So, this marginal energy has a free will. So, what about that energy, Vishnu Tattva and Do they have free will?
In a different way. It's a different energy, so there's a different. It acts in a different way. Specifically, the living entities are described as having this, marginal free will. But all of the Shaktis of Krishna are explained by Shukadeva Goswami in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam that ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead is playing with his own energies. And, it's his supreme will that's moving everything. And he compares it to a child playing with his own shadow. It's like if we put up a projector in here and shine it on the wall and let a few kids in, they'll run immediately to that and start making hand puppets on the hand shadow puppets on the wall and playing with their, their own images. So Shukadeva says all the different energies of Krishna are actually, he's interacting with them in that way. Yes. Rakshit, then Ramananda.
Of all these energies, it has been pointed out that there is also the material energy, which is a lower form of energy, and it is said that it is the separated energy of Krishna. And that contact with that brings about a living entity's separation, if you will, from Krishna, some kind of forgetfulness. That is a difficult concept to understand, that the energy is Krishna's, but yet it is separated, that somehow he doesn't consider that to be a desirable form of energy, and if living entities get associated or entangled in that, they get caught up in this cycle of birth and death and move away from Krishna, even though that energy is his. Is there any?
Separated energy. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kammano bhudir evacha ahankara itiyame binna prakritirashtara. Binna means separated. So Prabhupada gives an example of what this separate, first of all, so we can conceptualize what separated energy means. He says, it's like if Rakshit Jariwala tonight makes a tape recording, and then tomorrow we all come in here and you're off teaching a class somewhere, and then we turn on the tape recorder, everyone will come in and say, that's Rakshit Jariwala. But actually it's not you, it's your energy. It's separated from you now. But at the same time, it is you. So in the same way, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavashtita. He explains how he's present, but he's not present at the same time. Krishna is present in the spiritual world in his original form, the origin of everything, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sakchidananda Vigraha, Anadi Radir Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes, of everything else. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, Matak Sarvam Pravartate, Iti Matva Vajantimam, Buddha Bhava Samanvita. So he's present there in the spiritual world, but he's also present everywhere else, but at the same time he says, but I'm not present everywhere else. So he says, behold my mystic power. So Krishna expands himself into the material world in his Vishnu forms. And he's present as Paramatma everywhere. So back to the separated nature of the energy and how Krishna is interested or not interested in it. It's not that, Krishna always has an interest in the living entity. It's his part and parcel. And the material world is sort of an insignificant little corner of the spiritual world. Kind of like if you drive past the Folsom Prison, you'll barely notice it. You'll just see a few signs and they'll say, prison off this way. Or San Quentin, I guess it's still there over in San Francisco. And when you go by, you just notice, or Alcatraz, that's an even better one. Have you ever seen Alcatraz? It's an island out in the middle of the San Francisco Bay. Now it's become very popular. People like to go and look at it. But it's just a little island out there. That's where all the prisoners used to stay. But everyone goes on with their daily life, and it's separated there. The living entity who misuses independence is given facility by Krishna to live separately in that separated energy. And it's created because of separate interests, the living entity who has a separate interest from the Lord. Payam dvitiya. Dvitiya means that his attention's divided. He sees something else besides Krishna. There is nothing else but Krishna, but he chooses to see something separately.
Being a lower form of energy, one who makes contact with it, is not going to derive the bliss or happiness that would come from contact with a higher form of energy. Would that be the implication then, that those who are associating with material energy?
Yeah, it's like when a spark falls from the fire, it can fall onto dry grass, it can fall onto a bog, I mean like a marshy land, and then it gets practically extinguished. So according to our association with different modes of nature, we become either bright, like in the mode of goodness, is described as the bright energy, or the mode of passion, which is like smoky, or in the mode of ignorance, which we're practically extinguished, our original nature. So the living energy gets covered by different forms of the different degrees of these modalities of material nature. So although we're superior energy ourselves, aparayam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam daryate jagat, we can become overcome by this so-called lower energy because it's Krishna's energy. Daivahi esha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya, because it's conducted by Krishna. It's very difficult to overcome. Is his divine energy. But one who surrenders to Krishna can easily cross beyond it. And it's a matter of consciousness, because even those within the material nature, when they dovetail everything with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, then actually the Mahamaya, which keeps the living entity in the prison of the material world, actually becomes a helper to him and helps him get free from the clutches of the material world. So it's based on the desire of the living entity. And really, that happens because of association with sadhus. By karma and jnana, which means one's own endeavor to try to rise above the influence of the material nature, one will be unsuccessful. But by association with a pure devotee, then one gains the sukriti, the qualification for actually taking to bhakti, and this is the only path that can actually extricate us from the material world. Now, before it gets too late and we go too much into the philosophy, I want to read a little bit more from the Leela, telling a little, so we can feel different aspects of Balaram's personality. And this is from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And how many of you have read the Brihat Bhagavatamrita? You heard it, the recording of it. Anybody else read it? You've read parts of it. I remember when you got the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. We were still in Union Street. That was one of the first books you got. Nice. Anybody else have the Brihat Bhagavatamrita? You have it? Have you read a little bit? Long time ago. You've heard it? You read it? Okay. Sayadeva and I read a lot of it in Japan together. In fact, we read it so much that one guy yelled at us on the train one day. Do you remember that? Of course, I'm you know, like a bull in a china shop anyway, but we were on the Shinkansen, which is this bullet train, and I kept reading the Bhagavatamrita. It's a very proper culture. People are very polite, and I'm not. I'm an American. So I just kept reading out loud to Satya. When the train finally stopped, the man came over and chastised me severely before he got off. But at least he heard the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. I'm really sorry. Anyway, this section I'm going to read you is particularly nectarian. Oh, good, Kishore's back. I want you to hear this part. And by the way, we did untangle the whole Leela about the Shadgarbha Asuras. because last night I tripped over it, you know, when I said, when I made some statement about what happened. So we went back and read the Leela earlier from the Shastra to explain exactly what happened. And we even found out how they got liberated, which I alluded to last night, which is that Devaki asked for her sons back when Krishna and Balaram later came to visit her. And they went down to Sutala, where Bali Maharaj lives. And there they were, the six sons. They had been kept there. And Krishna and Balaram asked for them back. And, of course, Bali Maharaj delivered them. And he took them back to Devaki. Devaki, overcome with maternal love for them, began to breastfeed them because she milk was flowing from her breast out of motherly affection. And they drank that milk and they became liberated. And last night when I was explaining how they had come back and drunk the milk, it actually entered into my mind, and I hesitated. I don't know if you remember that. I was saying that they'd come back and they drank the milk from Devaki because Krishna had already, and I was like, when did he do that? And it's answered in the Bhagavatam. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that what happened was before Vasudev took Krishna, baby Krishna, from the prison and took him to Nanda Maharaj's house, he had him drink breast milk from Devaki so that he wouldn't get thirsty on the way. That's what he says. And therefore, when the Shadgarbha, they came back and they drank milk from Devaki's breast, they were liberated instantly because they were drinking Krishna's prasad. This goes to the importance of taking prasadam also. Okay, so now I'm going to read you a section that this is from Brihat Bhagavatamrita. This is the third volume. And this third volume, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, is called The Glories of Goloka. And I'm cutting right in the section 660. So here's the sixth chapter, 60th verse. And this is a short section, but it's going to explain something about Lord Balaram and how he relates to Lord Krishna in Goloka. And also, you're going to hear what it's like for the living entity to go back home, back to Godhead. But we're going to have to go a little bit over because I can't do it all in 5 minutes. Would that be all right? You do it all the time. What are you asking us now for? Okay. Let's see how far back I can go. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is Abhishta Labha, the attainment of all desires. Sri Gopakumar said, following Narada's instructions, Gopakumar is the devotee who received a mantra and began, he didn't know what it was. He was ignorant of spiritual life, but he chanted the mantra over and over again, and that led him to association with many great devotees, and he went through every part of the creation possible. And the mantra kept bringing him closer and closer until he got instruction from many different gurus, and it led him back home, back to Godhead. So I'm actually jumping to the end of the story for the sake of hearing this particular pastime of when Gopakumar is gone through every part of the universe, even through the different coverings of the universe, where there's a deity in each different covering of the universe, presiding deity. And now he's going back to Goloka Vrindavan. Sri Gopakumar said, following Narada's instructions here in Vraja, I went to see the many places of Sri Krishna's pastimes. I sang his names most dear to me. I sang about his pastimes loudly and sweetly. I focused my mind upon them, and I attained such a state of ecstasy and became so emotional that it embarrasses me even to think of it. How then can I describe this to anyone else? I spent my days and nights in great distress, always crying in a pitiful voice, not knowing whether the practice I had so long been following would lead me to happiness or cast me into an ocean of distress. I couldn't tell whether I was living in the flames of a forest fire or in the supreme nectar of the clear, cool waters of Sri Jamuna. Sometimes I thought I had fallen into the hands of some great deceiver. I was always submerged in a vast ocean of misery. Not even a drop of happiness ever touched me. In such a way I lived in this grove, this most attractive ornament of Vrindavan, and one day, while immersed in an ocean of weeping, I fell unconscious. Then the crest jewel of all who are merciful appeared before me. With his own lotus hand, a hand cool like nectar and always pleased to hold his flute, he wiped the dust from my limbs. It wasn't easy, but that greatest of cheats playfully stirred me back to consciousness by filling my nostrils with his unique, heady fragrances, which I had never known before. Then, seeing his lotus face, I quickly stood up. Not knowing what I was doing, my heart filling with joy, I tried to catch hold of his splendid yellow cloth. That king of charming heroes blew his flute in his own playful way and escaped behind me. Suddenly, he stepped into a grove, and alas, though I ran about looking, I couldn't find him. He had disappeared. Unable to see him, I fainted and fell into the swift current of the Jamuna. And as it forcefully carried me away, I seemed to regain normal awareness and looked around. I saw myself being transported to another place along some wonderful path by a vehicle flying faster than the mind and higher than one can imagine. Collecting my wits, I was amazed to see that I was passing through Vaikuntha Loka. And going beyond, I watched with great delight as I passed Ayodhya and other realms. I arrived at the shining world above all others, Sri Goloka, which I had long aspired to reach. Everything there appeared the same as in this divine Mathura Mandala of the material world. Commentary. So this commentary, I've skipped some of it for the sake of time, but I'm going to selectively read some of the commentary. This commentary is by Sanatan Goswami, and it was all in Sanskrit. So Gopi Puranadana, who's one of the premier editors, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who grew up in the movement translating and learning all these things, has translated all of his commentaries into the English that you'll now hear. Commentary. Gopakumar had long desired to attain Goloka, the land where his worshipable Lord Sri Krishna eternally enjoys his pastimes. The Mathura Brahman, Gopakumar's disciple, lacks the spiritual vision to understand Goloka properly, but to give him some idea of the glories of Goloka, Gopakumar compares it to the transcendental abode where the two of them now sit. Goloka's resemblance to the earthly Gokula is the very reason why Goloka does without the mood of reverence for God's supremacy and displays instead the priceless treasure of super excellent prema. And the reason you're hearing that there's two characters here is because there's a story within a story. And one devotee is telling the other story of how he went back to Godhead, etc. In that original land of Mathura, I visited Mathura city. I was surprised and happy to see that it resembled the Mathura here on earth. In that original Mathura, I heard that Kamsa had taken it upon himself to arrest his father and Krishna's parents, Devaki and Vasudev, and was ruling the kingdom. Out of fear of Kamsa, whose family and friends were enemies of the demigods, the Yadavas dared not enjoy themselves freely. Because of him, they constantly suffered all sorts of affliction. Some of the Yadavas escaped elsewhere, and others took shelter of him. I too was afraid of Kamsa. So as soon as I finished bathing at Vishranti Ghat, I hurriedly left Mathura and went to glorious Vrindavan. In that realm, beyond the reach of all the demigods, planetary rulers, and personal attendants of the Supreme Lord, I saw that life was going on just as here in this Aryavatra country in Bharat Varsha on earth. The sun was rising and the other natural events were taking place every day in the sky. And on the land, the people were speaking and behaving the same way as here. I was stunned and astonished. I was stunned by astonishment, extreme astonishment, and immersed in an ocean of ecstatic rasa. After a few moments, I saw some men who might have been cowherds wandering in the forest with some ladies, advanced in years and also wearing cowherd dress, who were picking flowers. Commentary. Gopakumar says that the men appeared as if cowherds, Gopan Eva. They certainly could not have been ordinary cowherds of the material world, nor could he assume that the old women he saw were what they appeared. They were dressed as cowherd women, but what they actually were, Gopakumar leaves for his student to find out later. The younger gopis were not there picking flowers, either because their feelings of separation from Krishna disenabled them from such useful service, or else they were not allowed to leave the cowherd village. In any case, Gopakumar saw clearly that even the old people of Goloka had very special love for the Supreme Lord. Text 23. The people there were different from anyone I had ever seen. Someone, it appeared, had stolen the wealth of their hearts and left them helplessly in love with him. Commentary. Since the beauty and good character of Goloka's people were not to be found anywhere else, Gopakumar could hardly think of an adequate metaphor by which these people could be described. They seemed distracted, as if someone had stolen their hearts. The actual cause of this strange behavior was that they suffered from divine madness. They seemed distraught because a thief had stolen the treasure of their hearts, or at least that was how things appeared on the surface. Vyakula Eva. Because Gopakumar had just been introduced to life in Goloka, he preferred to hold off on making a final judgment. Text 24. Simply by seeing them, I felt the same kind of loving affection. Trying hard, I composed myself and respectfully asked them the following questions. Commentary. The mere sight of these devotees made Gopakumar feel the same turbulent feelings they did. He managed to bring himself back to a condition almost sober, but not completely sober. Otherwise, he wouldn't have asked questions he could already answer. Text 25. O good people, you are served by happiness so vast that the greatest sages can't obtain it even in dreams. You are reservoirs of the mercy of the Lord, the husband of the goddess of fortune, mercy for which his loving devotees always pray. Please, please look with kindness upon this most wretched person who has come to you for shelter. Tell me, who is the king of this region? Where is his residence? Which road leads there? Dear, dear, most fortunate people, please be merciful to me, who am asking you with mournful cries. Please give me some answer, O faithful devotees, if even only by gesture. Commentary. Not receiving an answer, Gopakumar first guesses that perhaps these Golokavasis are nearly deaf. He therefore repeats his address more distinctly, saying loudly, Bho, Bho, dear people, dear people. He then realizes that they are not deaf, but simply paying no attention to him. So he tries to impress on them the sincerity of his request. He praises them as Dhanya, most fortunate, and Suvrata, faithful followers of regulative principles. And if these devotees are following a vow of silence, at least they can answer him by hand signals. Text 28. Oh, please hear the words of this tormented soul. Alas, you must be under the spell of that clever cheat. Commentary. Even after Gopakumar's fervent plea, the Gopavasis didn't respond. They didn't even look at him. But Gopakumar, rather than become angry with them for their neglect, placed the blame on the enchanting Krishna, who, after all, had deceived Gopakumar just as he had them. Krishna is indeed the most expert cheat. Only he could bewilder them like this, and no one else. Text 29. In this way I moved here and there, anxiously questioning each person I met. And as I made my way forward, I came to the pasturing grounds of the cowherds. Commentary. The anxiety Gopakumar felt upon his arrival in Goloka was actually a symptom of Dainya, the transcendental unconditional humility that is the most important prerequisite for gaining eternal residence in Goloka. Throughout the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami brings out this important point that advancement in bhakti is synonymous with dainya, which means extreme humility. The more one advances in devotional service, the more one experiences this humility to greater and greater degrees. Text 30. Looking around in all directions, I spotted in the distance a town adorned with the essence of all sweetness. Commentary. The other realms Gopakumar had visited in the material and spiritual worlds were each great in their own way, but none of them, not even Vaikuntha, was as attractive as this. 31. On one side of that town, all about, I heard wonderful songs sung by cowherd women and the charming sound of the churning of butter and the jingling of bangles. Commentary. Nowhere had Gopakumar ever heard such wonderful songs. Even though he was a liberated soul with no interest in material sense gratification, he was attracted by the jingling sound of these women's bangles. Text 34, trying to subdue my agitated joy, I walked forward and came across a seated elderly gentleman sobbing profusely, incessantly chanting, Krishna, Krishna. With some skillful effort, I made him speak, and I heard him say in a choked voice that this town belonged to Nanda, the king of the cowherds, Sri Krishna's father. As soon as I heard those words, I fainted, overcome with delight. Commentary. From this verse, we can understand that Nanda Maharaj was officially the ruler of the district. 35. After a moment, that compassionate old man revived me, and I ran ahead and approached a gateway of the town and sat there in the gate. And there I saw, by the hundreds of thousands and tens of millions, all sorts of wonders unseen, unheard of, unimaginable by anyone of this world. Commentary. About the amazing things he saw, Gopakumar cannot say much to someone like the Mathura Brahmin, who had not seen anything comparable. But being kindly disposed toward this disciple, Gopakumar will try to help him understand something. 37. O best of Brahmanas, I couldn't discern whether the people there were all enjoying the highest bliss or suffering in the grip of terrible misery. I heard the gopis' songs coupled with their crying, but were they songs of the greatest contentment or of the greatest sorrow? I couldn't tell. Commentary. The behavior of the Gopavasis arising as the culmination of their wonderful love for Krishna puzzled Gopakumar. Such exalted prema is beyond the understanding of all but a few most fortunate persons. 40. A person seeing that place might think he was in the material world. But by carefully reflecting on whatever he had seen before, he would understand he was now somewhere above all material planets, all higher non-planetary regions, and all the transcendental realms of the spiritual world. Commentary. Because Goloka in the spiritual sky and Mathura Mandala here on earth are non-different, at first Gopakumar mistook one for the other. Reflecting back on his travels, however, he reconsidered. He had been to Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, and Dwarka, and where he was now had all the signs of being even more exalted. Evidently, this place was greater than the 14 planetary systems of the material world, the outer coverings of the material universe, and the transcendental spiritual realms of Vaikuntha. His present location, therefore, must be above all other worlds. 41. Then an elderly lady came by. I bowed down to her and asked in a plaintive voice where Sri Nandanandana was playing today. Commentary. Gopakumar was still sitting inside the gateway of Nanda Maharaja's cowherd village. 42. The elderly lady said, this morning, that giver of life to us Vrajavasis went into the dense forest to play with his cows and friends and his respected elder brother. Later at dusk, he will return. Commentary. This old gopi anticipates that when Krishna returns home, he will expertly fulfill the individual expectations of each Vrajavasi. And if he doesn't come home on time, she further implies, we will all die from disappointment. 43. All the Vrajavasis are waiting on this path along the Jamuna, their eyes transfixed on the road. These trees stand with leaves erect, eagerly awaiting the chance to see him. Surely he will come along this path. Commentary discussing Krishna's imminent return has obviously enlivened the elderly gopi. 44. Sri Gopakumar said, "As if anointed by a downpour of the purest nectar, I gazed with one-pointed attention down the path the old lady had pointed out. The sheer force of my ecstasy had frozen my thighs. But with some effort I moved on, and I heard from afar a certain sound. Mixed with the mooing of cows, it was the supremely attractive murmur of Krishna's enchanting flute. That sound, sweet melodies of sportingly played notes, diverse with musical embellishments, was like nothing ever heard in the material world. Its attractive force at once overwhelmed everyone in the cowherd village." Commentary, the first sounds Gopakumar heard from Krishna's flute were sweet but not very clear. Such an indistinct musical sound is called kala. Then Gopakumar began to discern the different notes of the scale, and then coherent melodies like Malara Raga. And then as the sound came even closer, he could hear subtle embellishments known as Murchana, chromatic modulations. Meditating on the sound absorbed Gopakumar's attention, and indeed that of everyone present. 48. By the power of that sound, sap flowed in a downpour from the long rows of trees. A flood of tears fell from the eyes of every embodied being in the village of the cowherds. A shower of milk rained from the breasts of all Krishna's mothers, even the elderly, and the rapid currents of the Jamuna suddenly stood still. Commentary. As the living beings in the forest had all enjoyed the association of Krishna during the day, now in the evening everyone who lived in the village delighted in seeing him again. Not only Mother Yashoda, but many other mothers of Krishna, including his aunts and nurses, responded ecstatically to the sound that promised his return. All the mothers of the cowherd boys and calves had in fact become Krishna's mothers when Krishna had expanded himself to replace the boys and calves stolen by Brahma. Normally, nothing can stop the current of Sri Jamuna, but the sound of Krishna's flute is no ordinary force. Text 48. I didn't know whether that flute gave out poison or the nectar of immortality, whether its sound was harsh like thunder or soft like water, hotter than blazing fire or cooler than the moon. I couldn't tell. But that sound drove all the Vrajavasis mad. All of them were utterly bewildered. 49. Then I saw some women of Vraja come out of their homes, bearing in their hands the things needed to greet Krishna with worship. Others who passed by held ornaments and offerings of food on their heads. Commentary. Some of the ladies carried lamps, flowers, mustard seeds, and other articles for offering aarti to Krishna. Other ladies carried pots of butter on their heads and carried garlands and fragrant sandalwood pulp and sweet and spicy yogurt, all meant for Krishna's enjoyment. 50. Other ladies, ignoring everything around them, ran toward the mingled sounds of the mooing of the cows and the song of the flute. In the frenzy of love for Krishna, the ladies stumbled down the path. Commentary. When these gopis attempted to run forward, nothing could interfere with their own eagerness. This was evidence of how purely they loved Krishna. Some ladies ran with their ornaments in disarray. Some could hardly keep their belts and hair tied. Some stayed in their homes, stunned like trees, and others fell unconscious to the ground. Some of the women who had fainted, their faces wet with tears and saliva, were carried forward by their girlfriends. Other ladies, pained by the urges of their love for Krishna, went ahead, pressed on by their friends. Come see him! Commentary, the gopis had no need to specify to one another who the object of their attraction was. They simply referred to Krishna as Tame Tum, him, this person. Without any explicit description, they all knew whom they were talking about, Krishna, the Lord of their life. Text 53. The ladies, so diverse in complexion and adorned with diverse ornaments and dress, put to shame the good fortune of the goddess of fortune herself. Swiftly, the ladies ran to the bank of the Jamuna, absorbed in singing his names and pastimes. I too went forward, as if pulled by someone, joining the throng of gopis rushing forward on all sides. I too began to run quickly. Commentary: the young gopis came out of their houses and rushed in groups to the path along the Jamuna by which Krishna was expected to return. These gopis were more fortunate and more beautiful than even Mahalakshmi, the wife of Lord Narayan. I remember once being in Varshana, and we were in one temple, and the Vrajavasis all came in, and they were so eager when the doors opened that I literally, by these older ladies, I got just thrown out of the way. And rather than feel agitated, because sometimes in a crowd, if you get jostled really hard, you know, you can feel like, hey, you know. But I felt some ecstasy from it, because when I looked up, I saw that they didn't care for anything except having the darshan. And I'm just relating to this feeling that Gopakumar, he's being swept away by the association of these Vrajabasis who are running after Krishna. And this is the kind of association we get with devotees who have pure love for Krishna. We're also pulled along by their association. This is the process for actually advancing in devotional service. Text 55. Then from a distance I saw him, his charming flute in hand. Running quickly, he emerged from among his friends and animals and approached me, saying in a sweet voice, "Look, Sri Dama, here is my dear friend Swarup, the sun who shines on the lotus of your family." This is his name, Swarup, who's just entered into Vrindavan. Commentary: in text 55 through 59, Gopakumar describes his first impression upon seeing Krishna in Goloka. Because Krishna recognized Gopakumara as his friend, Swarup, Krishna left behind the cowherd boys and the cows and ran forward to greet him. Text 56. Krishna was dressed for the forest. His garments, earrings, and peacock feather crown all swayed to and fro. And so did his garland of kadamba flowers. His fragrance perfumed all directions, and his beautiful lotus face blossomed with a playful smile. His lotus eyes beamed with a merciful glance, and the varied assets of beauty decorated him in a singular way. The fingers of his lotus hand busily pushed back the locks of his hair, which flew about, adorned by the dust raised by the cows. His tender, divine lotus feet touched the surface of the earth just to grant her the gift of supreme splendor. Playfully dancing as they moved, they attracted everyone's heart with their eagerness to walk quickly with large steps. The effulgence of his cloud-colored body, shining with the full sweetness of youth, lit up all corners of the sky. His beauty, which captured the hearts of the ever-dear devotees of Raja, was an ocean abounding with countless excellences. Commentary: unable to express much more about the beauty of Krishna's body, which glowed like a new rain cloud, Gopakumar sums up Krishna's beauty by describing it as an ocean of excellences. As an ocean is constant and unfathomably deep, so are all of Krishna's personal qualities. In Goloka, Krishna's beloved devotees know the value of his beauty and other virtues because the hearts of those devotees are completely attracted to him as his heart is to them. 60. He leaped forward and came close to me, compelled by the affection of his helpless devotee. I fainted in love at seeing him. He caught hold of me by the neck, and suddenly he too fell to the ground. Commentary: Gopakumar was already aware, at least theoretically, that Krishna is very affectionate to his helpless devotees, but now he learned that Krishna had affection specifically for him. Merely seeing Krishna was enough to utterly enchant Gopakumar, but this new discovery pushed him toward the limit of ecstasy. A moment later, I reawoke and carefully freed my neck from his grasp. I stood up and saw him on the ground in a faint, moistening the dust-covered path with his tears. Commentary: even though Krishna was unconscious, he was crying so profusely that his tears were turning the dust of the road into mud. 62. Some gopis came and said, "Look, who has come here? What has he done? He has put our life and soul into such a state. Alas, alas, just see, people of Raja, now we are all dead." Commentary: the gopis didn't know who Gopakumar was, other than some stranger dressed as a coward boy. Text 63. This must be some servant of that great wizard Kamsa. Lamenting like this in many ways, the gopis cried loudly in distress as they surrounded Krishna. Then from behind Krishna, several groups of cowherds quickly approached. Seeing him in such a state, they cried with pitiful voices. From far away in the village, Nanda and the other elder cowherds heard this terrible sound of crying. So too did Yashoda, ever affectionate to her son, and so did the other elder ladies of the maidservant and the maidservants. Together they all ran to that place, their feet stumbling on the path. Bewildered, they too cried, "Alas, alas!" Then the cows and bulls and calves came there, and the black deer and other animals. Seeing Krishna in that state, they wept in agony. The animals all crying out in love, their faces drenched with floods of tears, approached Krishna one by one and gently smelled and licked him again and again. Commentary: the men, women, and animals all spontaneously reacted so desperately because Krishna was the exclusive center of their existence. 69. Great numbers of birds flying overhead told also of their misery by making a tumultuous noise that sounded like people crying. Commentary: the birds roaming in the sky could not discern exactly what was going on below, but they responded sympathetically nonetheless. Text 70. And the immobile creatures in great pain within seemed suddenly to dry up. What more is there to say? All beings, moving and non-moving, were on the verge of death. As for me, I was drowning in a vast ocean of sorrow. Confused about what to do, severely tormented, I put Krishna's feet on my head and began profusely sobbing and lamenting. Commentary: when he put Krishna's feet on his head, he could see how beautiful, soft, and attractive they were. 72. Then Lord Balabhadra, Krishna's older brother, quickly arrived from some distance away, full of fear. White-complexioned and arrayed in blue garments, he appeared charming, for he was the same age as Krishna and as nicely dressed. Commentary: unable to keep up with Krishna, when Krishna had run to meet Gopakumar, Balaram had fallen behind with the other coward boys. But now he anxiously hurried forward, concerned for Krishna's safety. Gopakumar saw that Balaram was of the same Kishore age as Nanda Nandana, but differed from him in being white like the fibers in a lotus stem and being dressed in blue. 73. Lord Balabhadra, that most skillful of persons, cried for a moment, but then seemed to regain his composure and looked all around. With great care and attention, he made me hold his younger brother by the neck with my arms. Commentary: at first Balaram cried in distress to see Krishna in such a condition, but he quickly gathered his wits and looked all around to find out what had made Krishna faint. 74. He wiped Krishna's beautiful limbs clean with my hand and made me loudly call out to him with many plaintive cries. Then he made me lift Krishna up from the ground. Suddenly, Krishna opened his eyes, sealed till then by a flood of tears. Seeing me, he joyfully embraced and kissed me. But then he looked around and became embarrassed. Commentary: Krishna had become helplessly bewildered by love for his friend, and he was embarrassed by the thought that from his tearful reaction to Gopakumar's arrival, everyone could see this. That best of lords took my hand in his own left lotus hand, and received me as a long-lost bosom friend. He asked me various questions. Then he greeted all the people of Raja and entered the best of coward villages with the gait of an elephant. Commentary: Krishna's closest friends are as dear to him as life itself. Holding Gopakumar's hand, Krishna welcomed him with such questions as, "Dear friend, are you healthy and happy?" 77. The forest animals were miserable because now they had to part from him. Unable to go anywhere without him, they simply stood at the entrance of the village, ready to spend the entire night there in the hope of seeing their lord again the next morning. The birds flew here and there, high over the village, to watch him. But when night came and they could no longer see him, they cried out as if weeping and flew away. Commentary: all the creatures in Goloka, including the jungle beasts and the birds, are fixed in unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Hare Krishna. So this is, I particularly wanted to hear that section and wanted to read it to everyone because of, well, it's a very nectarian section, don't you agree? And also, that small part that Balaram plays, we can remember how he's Dauji, he's the older brother. Someone had brought up his pastime of looking out for Krishna earlier. Someone had said something. He recognized when Krishna had expanded himself into all the calves and boys, that actually he knew Krishna was up to something. And also, when Krishna had jumped into the Kaliya lake and was held within the coils of Kaliya, you can imagine when Yashoda came and all the coward men, actually they were all dying out of anxiety to see him there. And the coward men, they wanted to run into the lake. But Balaram held them all back because he knew what was going on. He knew Krishna was actually simply playing with the snake. And so Dauji, Balaram, his elder brother, is always there with Krishna in these pastimes. And he could see, even though everyone else was in complete anxiety, what was going on. And he assisted Gopakumar in reuniting with Krishna. Gopremanande Hari Hari Bo. Any last reflections, comments? I do want to hear just a couple of reflections from anything from today so far. Any impression or thought that's stuck in your mind?
It was very interesting to note that part where you said that Krishna was the center of their lives, and just to imagine the kind of life that they have, like everybody's just focused to Krishna. That was very, very relishing there. And the way you know, all the animals are just, you know, they are so desperate that he's gone and they are waiting for the next day. So that's such a good feeling to look forward to for the next day.
Jai. Rakshit.
The other is a recurring theme in this Brihad Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam Amrita, where Gopakumar, is always questioning his own journey. Where is he headed? He is doubting to a certain degree some instructions he has received, and also not certain where he will end up. And this, the verses here, it seems 55 to 60 or so, finally revealed that he came right there at the spot where he met Lord Krishna. So that is a culmination of this journey and the bright spot in the whole thing.
Let's give Rakshit a hand for that one. That was very encouraging. Nice observation. Thank you. Because often we can't see exactly why Krishna is arranging certain things. There could be adversity, there can be disaster, so many things can happen. And even on good days, we can question, is this the real thing? Is this the real place? Is this everything? And we move forward not, with absolute certainty, but with help from our gurus and from Shastra and from Krishna within the heart. And these things are the mystery of spiritual life. Very nice. And one more. Then I'll be satisfied. Could be here all night. Yes, Raja Kishori. Or is it Lali that wants to...
I particularly like the part where, and it kind of got stuck in my mind, that that Gop Kumar theoretically knew that Krishna loved him and was affectionate toward him, but it was completely different to actually experience that love from Krishna directly and to actually have that as a proof that that theoretical thought was practical now.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. Thank you very much. So let's end there, or actually begin there with our next phase, which is chanting Krishna's names. There's always a new beginning. The nature of Ananda. It's ever-increasing glorification of Krishna in different ways and forms. So we'll put away all the books, and then we'll have kirtan and artik. Gopremanande Aribo. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Brihat Bhagavatam Rita ki jai.